Last week on Fifth Sunday, when various of the men got up and spoke, Brother Josh commented about how Mary and Job were very faithful in their in their various situations. Mary was very righteous and her response to the angel that Gabriel that came to visit her and let her know that she was going to have a child, how special that was, given that so many in so many of the people in the Bible were not so faithful, and there are many different stories along those lines. One such story, and it triggered a thought in me when, as I meditated over his comments later as the week unfolded, was the story of Ishmael. And you can go, I'm not going to go there and read through all of it, but the story of Ishmael and his being born, and we all know it's in Genesis chapter 16, and it starts out with Sarah, obviously insisting giving her handmaid to Abraham, such that he would have a child, because she believed that God's promise was not going to come to pass. And you contrast that with Mary, which was exactly the opposite. She totally had faith that what the promise was, that it would occur. Of course, Mary didn't have to wait as long before the manifestation of that came about. And I think you all understand that Ishmael was eventually born as a result of that. And Ishmael is the father, so to speak, of the Islam nation. And when man decides to help the Lord with something, it usually turns out to be a disaster, and I think we can say that that's exactly what has happened, and is the very reason to this very moment that there is war underway in the Middle East. And if we were to go to Luke, and I'm going to turn there just for a second and read one verse, Luke chapter 21 and verse 25. And this is Jesus speaking as he was, this is the Luke version of the Olivet Discourse. And Jesus is talking about answering a question from the disciples. And in that question, they had asked about when these certain times were going to come, when the temple would be destroyed, etc. But in verse 25, Jesus says, "And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars, and upon earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring." Now, what do we see in the world right now today is distress of nations, and we see it all around the world. Some of that distress are the protests that we see in our own country right now, and the distress of our government trying to deal with whether they should do this or that in regards to what's happening between Hamas and Israel and Hezbollah. And, of course, it's been in the news a tremendous amount. And I am not trying to say that this is an indication that this is the end time, but it could be leading to that. We obviously don't know when that time has come, but Jesus tells us to watch. And if you actually go over, and I'm not going to go there either, but if you go into Psalms, the 83rd Psalm, you read about the many nations that are gathered around and against Israel. And many of those nations, one of them listed is the Philistines. and Philistines are the precursor to the Palestinian that are in that same area where the Philistines were back in, you know, 1,000 years before Christ when Psalms was written. And so we see this kind of great distress, and of course, it is very easy to get caught up in it, concerned about what it means, concerned about how it's going to impact our nation, a lot of different feelings that we have. And so there's much that could be discussed about what's happening there. But I will say we know that in Psalms 83, it talks about many nations. We have Hamas that is, has sent bombs in, and now Israel's going into the Gaza Strip. We also have Hezbollah that's lobbing missiles periodically from the north. So it's, you know, nations surrounding Israel. Hezbollah is a Shiite organization, and Hamas is a Sunni organization. They don't actually like each other very much, but yet they are willing to work together to the destruction of Israel and the Jewish people, God's chosen people. And we see this happening. So it made me think of Psalms 11. I want to read Psalms number 11. And starting in verse 1, it's only 7 verses long. In the Lord put I my trust. By the way, this is a psalm of David. In the Lord put I my trust. How say ye to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? For lo, the wicked bend their bow. They make ready their arrow upon the string, that they may privily shoot at the upright in heart. So what this is saying is that the enemy of David, of the Jewish people, are preparing. That's what bending the bow is. They're preparing. They're making their arrow ready to attack. And as we go into verse 3, it says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids try the children of men. So the Lord is on his throne, and we know that, and that's what we look to in times of difficulty when the enemy is preparing or starting to actually attack. The Lord trieth the righteous, in verse 5, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. So because the Lord loves his children, he does trieth them in order to build their faith and in order to make them stronger in their faith and in their love of the Lord. Verse 6, upon the wicked, but he hates the wicked. That's the last half of verse 5. Verse 6, upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone and a horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of thy cup. For the righteous Lord loveth righteousness. His countenance doth behold the upright. So this psalm is simply saying that God hates the wicked, and the wicked that are in preparation of doing evil things, which we see. But yet, he loves the righteous, he cares for them, and he's going to take care of them, and he's on the throne. And that, if there's any message for today, it's that God is on his throne right now. But I want to go back to verse 3 here, and it says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? If the very foundations of your own personal foundation of faith, the foundations of a country, a region, a country, a people, be destroyed, And you think about a foundation of a building, if it's destroyed, the building falls down. So if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? If you're looking to God, what do you do? And it says the very next verse, the Lord is in his holy temple. And you look upon him and you look to him when those foundations are broken. The reason that I'm thinking of the foundations is because what we see so much in our country, today, is foundations that are crumbling. Foundations all around. The leadership in Washington, D.C. is not good. There's corruption. There's evil. There are all of these social constructs that are put forward that are evil. The things that they want to teach in the schools that is evil. We see this all around us. And so if we be God's children, if that's who we are, then he sees us as the righteous. What are we to do when we see all these things crumble? Now, I know that everybody in here knows that we need to keep looking to the Lord, and that's what we need to do. But we still have to deal with the things that are around us. Now, one of the things that's very interesting, and I'm going to read some comments from our recently elected Speaker of the House. And the reason I want to read this is because I think this man represents something as an example that I would like to put forth that's very biblical in the sense. This is not to uplift this individual. His name is Mike Johnson. I don't know how much you've listened to what he has stated, but there were some things that he said that I wrote down that really touched me very strongly. He said, we are in desperate times. The hour is late and the crisis is great. Of course, speaking about what we're dealing with in the U.S. I am encouraged by the fact that the previous generations of Americans, the framers, the founding fathers of America, and the generations following them facing great difficulties like the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the Great Depression, World War I, World War II. When leaders got into trouble that was beyond the scope that they could solve themselves, they sought divine guidance. It says, in God we trust, above the house rostrum in Washington, D.C. We need to humble ourselves, believe God is not done with America yet. This is what this nation was founded on and who we need to look to for solutions. So if you go back to my comment about distress of nations with perplexity, what does perplexity mean? It means there's no way out. Many times in my life, I've been in situations, mostly in a work environment, where you felt like you were boxed in. And I don't mean because you were working for an evil boss or something, but circumstances were such that you didn't know which way to turn. You didn't know how to solve the problems that you were facing. All right? And what often happened is something big would occur, and there'd be a big shift. And whether that was God at work or not, I think many times it was. But that's the situation we find ourselves in the world today. Many, many, all nations in various forms of distress. And we need to look to our Heavenly Father because there is no clear way out. God always knows what he's doing, and he always knows how to deal with whatever the circumstance is. And that's what Psalms 11 is really telling us. Matthew 5:16, if you were to turn there, says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. That's an interesting statement, and in the world in general and in all of the interactions that I've had with people in various religions, they read that as, let your light so shine by doing your good works. By doing your good works, that's what makes the light, your light shine. All right. And it glorifies God. That's not what this verse says. This verse says, let yourself so shine before men that they may see your good works. What's first? The light shines first. Where does the light come from? It comes from the Holy Spirit that the good Lord put in you. And how do you have that light shine forth? You acknowledge God in all that you are doing so that when you do your good works, it glorifies God. And if you look at the statements that I read to you from Mike Johnson, this is a man that's in a position where it is not popular to talk about anything in the Bible. He has been maligned in so many different ways, from so many different angles, from people in the very Congress in which he works, and from the press and the media, and commentators out there, and comedians and all of those. All right? But his light shined because he acknowledged God and what God has done for us, and that is who we need to turn to. And now, whatever actions he takes, all eyes are on him. And if those actions are godly and God leads us through this, God will be glorified and people will recognize it. And that's what that verse is saying. It doesn't mean go out and do good works, which we should all be doing, so your light will shine. It's saying your light shines, therefore go do good works and glorify God. And I think that that's an important distinction. And one of the things that this thing that I read from the speaker triggered in me is that exact thought. It's a good example of this. So we're in a nation right now that feels somewhat leaderless, in the sense that many of the things we see don't make sense. So guess what? There's examples of this in the Bible, to no one's surprise here. And if you were to turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 6, I want to talk about one of those examples. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. In the year King Uzziah died, he saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. Now, we're going to go through some of the other verses after this, but who is King Uzziah? All right. And if you turn to 2 Chronicles, chapter 26, let's talk about who Uzziah was. Chapter 26 of 2 Chronicles, verse 1, then all the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king in the room of his father, Amaziah. Guess what? Uzziah became a king of Judah. He built Eloth and restored it to Judah. After that, the king slept with his fathers. That means his father slept with the fathers. And here in verse 3, 16 years old was Uzziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was also Jochelah of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah did. And he sought God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding in the visions of God. And as long as he sought the Lord, God made him to prosper. So I want you to stop for a minute and think about having a king or a ruler, or in our country, a president that rules for 52 years and does that which is right in the eyes of God. How wonderful would that be? This was a very prosperous time for Judah under this king. And again, I want you to imagine having 52 years of great prosperity. We have to change presidents at least once every 8 years, and sometimes more often than that. And if you have a good one and then a not a good one, you end up going in different directions, and it gets frustrating, and that's exactly what we've seen in the last few years. But imagine the prosperity that comes from this. Verse 6, and he went forth and warred against the Philistines. Sound familiar, the Philistines? And break down the wall of Gath and the wall of Jabneth and the wall of Ashdod, and built cities around Ashdod and among the Philistines. And God helped him against the Philistines and against the Arabians that dwelt in Geba and Mahanans. And the Ammonites gave gifts to Uzziah, and his name spread broad, even to entering in of Egypt, even down in Egypt. For he strengthened himself exceedingly, all because God's blessings on him. Now, without going through all the details of the rest of his time here, if you move down to I'll go around verse 16. But when he was strong, Uzziah was very strong after all these years, all right? He became stronger and stronger, both with his own people and with the surrounding countries. His heart was lifted up to his destruction. Pride goeth before a fall. For he transgressed against the Lord his God and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. And Azariah, the priest, went in after him, and with him 80 priests of the Lord that were valiant men. So he had many priests that went with him, and they withstood Uzziah the king and said unto him, it appertaineth not unto thee, Uzziah, to burn incense into the Lord, but to the priest and the sons of Aaron. All right. Now, from the tribe of Levi. So, because of pride, the king was so strong that he felt like, okay, now I'm going to go burn incense to the Lord in the holiest of holies. And that is only reserved for the priest, as it says here. So if I go back and read the rest of 18 all the way through, and they withstood Uzziah the king and said unto him, it appertaineth not unto thee, you're not qualified for this, Uzziah, to burn incense unto the Lord, but to the priests and sons of Aaron that are consecrated to burn incense, go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast trespassed, neither shall it be for thine honor from the Lord God. Then Uzziah was wroth and had a censer in his hand to burn incense, and while he was wroth with the priests, disagreeing, and went forward with what he was doing, the leprosy even rose up in his forehead before the priest in the house of the Lord from beside the incense of the altar. And then skipping down to verse 21, and Uzziah the king was a leper unto the day of his death, and dwelt in the several house, a separate house, being a leper, for he was cut off from the house of the Lord. So the point here is, that if you remember, we started in the 6th chapter of Isaiah, And it starts in the year King Uzziah died. So they had this very popular, very successful, prosperous king and prosperous country for 52 years. And then he died in disgrace. All right. And this is when Isaiah is speaking of. The king died and great distress exists. A lack of leadership, which is exactly what I believe we see in our country this day. Above it stood, verse 2, above it stood, so he mentions, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up. So in this time of distress, he saw the Lord on his throne, high and lifted up. And above it stood the seraphims, each one had six wings with twain, he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. So the seraphims have six wings, and two of them they covered their face, all right? Two of them they covered their feet, hiding who they were, all right? It wasn't about who they were, and it wasn't their walk, but it was that they could fly with the other wings. And one of them cried, so they're somewhat unknown in a sense, but yet these are creatures that he saw. And one cried unto another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And the post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and meaning it shook, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, "Woe is me, for I am undone," this is Isaiah, "because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." So Isaiah is describing the vision that he had, seeing the Lord on his throne. And this is in direct, and if you've got a center column reference, it'll tell you directly into Revelations chapter 4. And I want to turn over to Revelations 4. And I know we've been doing a study of Revelations 4 and 5. Actually, we're on to chapter 8 or 9. Right now, but I want to emphasize the Lord on his throne. In the midst of distress, in the midst of the lack of leadership on this earth, in the midst of all those things, we are to recognize and know that the Lord is on his throne. And I think the vision of the Lord on his throne is what we need to have in our minds and be looking to and thinking upon and meditating on all the time, especially during times of great distress. And I would say even in times of great good, because that's when we're most likely to fall, just as Uzziah did. And that's why we need to keep this vision in our minds all the time. So if you go to chapter 4, and let's see where I want to start. Well, let's just start with 4 verse 1. "After this I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven, and the first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet," meaning very loud and attention-grabbing, "talking with me, which said, 'Come up hither, and I will show these things which must be hereafter.'" So these are the things that are hereafter, but you're going to get a vision of the Lord on his throne. "And immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne was set in heaven, and one sat on the throne." One sat on the throne. That's God the Father sitting on the throne. How wonderful it is that we're given this vision. I mean, we don't know what heaven is like except what the Bible tells us what it's like. And Jesus has shared some of that with us. And here in Revelations, the Apostle John is telling the vision that he was given by the Lord. "And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone, a sardine stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne in sight like unto an emerald. And round about the throne were 24 seats, and upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white raiment, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. And out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thunderings and voices, and there were 7 lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the 7 spirits of God. Now, I'm not going to try to go through and explain every one of these things. In fact, most of this we've discussed in our Bible discussions on Wednesday night. What I want to focus on is the vision that you're seeing of the Lord on the throne. It says right here, around the throne there was like jasper and sardine and emeralds. And then it talks about rainbows and lightnings and thunderings and voices. Try to imagine what that is. In verse 6, it says, and before the throne there was a sea of glass like unto crystal. And in the midst of the throne and round about the throne were 4 beasts full of eyes before and behind. So imagine God Almighty sitting on His throne, and imagine this throne room, a sea of glass, and all of these stones and rainbow and light so bright. And you see these creatures that are there worshiping God. What a beautiful scene this is. Now, if you go over and read in Genesis about the creation in chapter 1, it talks about the firmament. And again, I'm not going to go through all of that, but we know from that creation that the firmament is this space that God put above the earth, all the way into the universe, the stars, and all of that are in this firmament. Somewhere above all of that is where this throne room is that God is in. And I will tell you that reading over in the 7th chapter of Genesis, when we read about the flood and how that occurs, water came down from above, not just from clouds, but from way above. We know that when this earth was made, created by God, made by God, that He put water up above and around this universe, way, way, way up there, further than we can see or further than we can go. That's where the sea of glass is. That's where the throne is. That's how much higher above us God is and above this earth. We know His thoughts are so much higher than ours. I'm trying to paint this vision, and it's very hard to do because there's no words that really can fully describe it. And then it talks about the beast, and I spoke on the beast and who I think that they are representing multiple visions of Christ as described in the gospel. Then we go into verse chapter 5, and it says, and I saw the right hand of Him that sat on the throne, a book written within and on the backside, sealed with 7 seals. And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the book and to loose the seals thereof? And no man in heaven, nor in earth, neither under the earth, was able to open the book, neither to look thereon. And I wept much sadness because no one could open the book, because no man was found worthy. Verse 5, and one of the elders saith unto me, weep not, behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the 7 seals thereof. Now we know that Lion of Judah is Jesus Christ. If we read a little bit further, and I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne and of the 4 beasts and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as it had been slain, having 7 horns and 7 eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent forth unto all the earth. We're told the lion of the tribe of Judah, Jesus Christ, and then he's a lamb. Now think about a lion and a lamb. Do they get along together on this earth walking around? I would dare say the lamb, if he gets very close to lions, in serious trouble on this earth. But yet here's Jesus Christ, who represents the lion, the ruler, the sovereignty of God, the king of all, and he was also a lamb, a servant who died for us. And that is why we have such a blessing to look above and see this throne that the Apostle John is revealing to us right here. The things that we see in this earth right now, in that distress, is making this even more beautiful to us to see this and to know that he's on his throne. So in the midst of the time of Uzziah, he was on his throne. And there's much more that can be said there, and it's beyond the topic that I wanted to speak on. But I want to emphasize very strongly that looking to God and having this vision of him on his throne is something that's very comforting. I try to imagine all of this that I've tried to describe. And there was a movie many of you have seen, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful manner, but one of the Superman movies where Superman traveled up to the North Pole or whatever, and he had this glass crystal abode there. And to some degree, it's a little bit like the picture that I might see in that throne room, only much more beautiful than that. I don't know if you remember all the crystal and everything and how unique and special that appeared. And again, trying to get in my mind what that throne room looks like, and when someday we will have the opportunity to see it. All these things we see going on back in the time of Uzziah, and what we see, and I talked about Psalms 83 and the nations gathering around Israel. That was 1,000 years before Christ. 3,000 years ago that was written, and we're seeing the same thing exactly happening right now in the Middle East and causing distress of nations. There is, as Ecclesiastes tells us, there is no new thing under the sun. We see the same thing over and over and over again. So let me close by going back to Psalms 11. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? When all of our foundations are being torn down, what we are accustomed to. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven, way up there. His eyes behold, his eyelids try the children of men. The Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence his soul hateth. And upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone, and a horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of their cup. So many times when I see wickedness and I don't understand it and I can't comprehend why our leaders in Washington, D.C. are corrupt. Not all of them. I'm not saying they all are. And I'm not picking on one political party or the other, because it's throughout. But how can they be that way? And I don't understand it. And I dare say I don't think you understand it. And why we can't? Because God put something in our heart that prevents us from understanding. So it's a good thing we don't understand it. We recognize it. We see it. But we can't understand why. And how wonderful it is that the good Lord is going to take care of all of it. in his due time when he knows it's the right time. In verse 7, for the righteous Lord loveth righteousness, his countenance doth behold the upright. And that we have to be very thankful for. Thank you for your time.